This meeting of the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs will now come to order. It is 10:18 on Tuesday, April 1st, 2025. We are in the Capitol, Room 124. Members present include Representative Gray, Representative Hall, Representative Fields, and myself, Representative Eichheit, Chair. Let the record reflect we do have a quorum to conduct business. Please remember to silence your cell phones for the meeting, and thank you for that. I'd like to extend a thank you to Cale Brown from House Records and Zach Lawhorn from Juno LIO for staffing our committee meetings, and my aide, Sophie Weiser. We have two items on the agenda today. Senate Joint Resolution 10 by Senator Wilikowski. Then we will have a presentation on the USS Ted Stevens. We'll start first with Senate Joint Resolution 10, a presentation. This is the first hearing on SJR 10 in our committee, but we have heard the House companion by Representative Nelson. Here to present is Senator Wilikowski and his intern, Joshua McColes. Welcome. Please come forward, put yourself on the record, and give us an overview of the resolution.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bill Wilikowski, State Senator for East Anchorage, and thank you for hearing this bill. I know the committee is very familiar with this, having heard the companion, and I'll let my intern, Josh, go through the details. But very, very briefly, the history of the Hmong's role in the Vietnam War is not that well known, but it is really an incredible, heroic, and tragic story. In 1960, the CIA recruited tens of thousands of Hmong soldiers, some as young as 11 years old, to support the United States in Laos and Vietnam. And they gathered intelligence, engaged in conventional and guerrilla warfare, flew combat missions, directed airstrikes, rescued downed Americans. Fighter pilots, they died at a rate of 10 times that of United States soldiers in the Vietnam War, with tens of thousands dying. This resolution seeks to urge Congress to award the Congressional Gold Medal to Hmong veterans in general for their heroic actions. This is there is precedent for doing something like this. The Philippine veterans who fought in World War II were awarded a similar Congressional Gold Medal. And I'm going to turn it over, if I could, Mr. Chairman, to Josh and have him do a quick presentation. Thank you.
Please do.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Happy April 1st. For the record, my name is Joshua McColes, intern to Senator Wilikowski. I'm here to present SJR 10. It is a companion resolution to HJR 10. The resolution urges Congress to award the Hmong veterans of the Vietnam War the Congressional Gold Medal. I will now share this presentation with you, which sheds lights on an often overlooked chapter of American Hmong history. I feel it is our duty to finally recognize the Hmong who risked everything for the American cause. First, I'll go through some history of the Hmong veterans. So who are the Hmong? They are an ethnic group from China, Laos, Vietnam, and Thailand. During the Vietnam War, the Hmong were recruited by the CIA to assist military operations in Laos. They played a critical role in disrupting enemy supply chains, gathering intelligence, and protecting U.S. strategic positions. Their contributions and sacrifices remain largely unrecognized, yet they were instrumental to the operations in Laos. In 1961, the U.S. CIA covertly recruited and trained Hmong soldiers to counter the North Vietnam forces in Laos as what became known as the Secret War. It was led by General Vang Pao. They intercepted communist forces, disrupted supply lines, and rescued American pilots, often at the cost of 10 Hmong lives for every American saved. Despite being heavily outnumbered, the Hmong displayed exceptional courage and resilience in battle. They went on many reconnaissance missions, rescuing American Air Force pilots. They suffered immense casualties. Over 35,000 soldiers were killed, and thousands more were wounded. during the aftermath of the Vietnam War, when the U.S. withdrew from Vietnam in 1975, the Hmong were left behind to face brutal retaliation from the new communist Lao government. Many Hmong were executed, sent to re-education camps, and forced to flee into the jungle. Over 138,000 Hmong refugees fled to Thailand, and thousands perished trying to cross the Mekong River. When the U.S. pulled out, the Hmong were left to face brutal retaliation, imprisonment, execution, exile, and forced into re-education camps. During the Hmong resettlement integration in the U.S., the U.S. accepted tens of thousands of Hmong refugees with large communities settling in California, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Alaska. Despite their efforts, the Hmong veterans have still struggled with assimilation, cultural preservation, and for full recognition of their contributions to the Vietnam War. On to recognition and the Hmong Hmong American Veterans Day. In 1997, the U.S. government formally acknowledged the Hmong's contribution by dedicating the Lao Memorial at Arlington National Cemetery. In 2019, Alaska designated May 15th as Hmong American Veterans Day. The push for further recognition continues, including efforts to award the Hmong the Congressional Gold Medal. So for the push for the Congressional Gold Medal, U.S. allies, including Philippine World War II veterans, have been honored with this same award. U.S. Senator Gary C. Peters introduced S-3271 in 2023, the Hmong Congressional Gold Medal Act, but it stalled in committee. The medal is the highest civilian honor in the U.S., requiring an act of Congress to be awarded. So what is the Congressional Gold Medal? I'm sure you're fully aware. It's the oldest civilian honor awarded by Congress. It recognizes outstanding achievements and contributions to U.S. history. Each medal is unique and designated by the U.S. Mint. One medal is struck and put it on display at the location of choice by the honoree. And bronze replicas are also made for sale by the U.S. Mint. Going into Congressional Gold Medal recipients, historically, it has been awarded to figures such as George Washington and the Wright brothers. It also, of course, has recognized foreign allies, including the Philippine World War II veterans, which was awarded in 2016. The Hmong's case is similar. Bravery, sacrifice, and an unfulfilled promise to from the U.S. Here's my call to action. The Hmong veterans fought alongside U.S., but were never granted a worthy veteran award. I urge this body to pass SJR 10 and send a clear message to Congress that Alaska stands in solidarity with our Hmong veterans and their families. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you. Do any of the members of the committee have questions? Seeing none, thank you. We do have some invited testimony. Online is May Ramirez Zhang. She's online to give this testimony. She is a proud Hmong daughter, the CEO and co-founder of HEART Incorporated, which stands for Hmong Empowering, Advocating, Reforming Together, a nonprofit organization based in Anchorage that is dedicated to supporting and uplifting the Hmong community. Ms. Ramirez Zhang, please take yourself off mute, put yourself on the record, and begin your testimony.
Hello, my name is May Ramirez Zhang, and I'm not sure if you guys can hear me, so...
Yeah, we can. Go
let
ahead.
Let me know if you guys can hear me. Yeah. Okay, perfect. So my name is May. I am invited to testify today. It is with gratitude to be before you this morning, but it's also with great disappointment that it took about five decades, four generations, and a second generation immigrant such as myself to stand before you to testify on a war that I didn't fight and in an effort that I didn't make. But I am before you because I am Hmong. I am a Hmong woman and a Hmong daughter. I am the daughter of former Colonel Tisha Shone, a leader in the Hmong community who fought alongside General Vang Pao during the Vietnam War. And while it would be more meaningful for my father, former Colonel Tisha Shone, to be here today to share his experiences with you guys, I don't think I want to burden him with the painful memories. My home is here in Alaska, and I am here to advocate for a cause close to the Hmong people's heart. This resolution urging the U.S. Congress to award the Congressional Gold Medal to the Hmong veterans of the Vietnam War. The medal represents our nation's highest recognition for significant contributions and should be honored to the Hmong veterans who fought bravely alongside American forces. Many remain unaware of the extensive involvement of the Hmong in the secret war, a term that is often overlooked in history classes today. But today, I am here to amplify the voices of those who cannot speak for themselves, for the families of the courageous individuals who sacrificed so much. We owe it to these veterans our profound gratitude, and I feel a sense of responsibility to share their stories, ensuring that their sacrifices are not forgotten. The suffering endured by the Hmong after the U.S. withdrawal, including genocide and the lasting impact of Agent Orange, continues to affect many. The sacrifices of the Hmong during the Vietnam War are just as significant as those of the other forces that were recognized. Similar groups like the Filipino World War II veterans who have received the Congressional Gold Medal. The contribution of the Hmong people should not be seen as any less important, and denying this resolution would be dismissive of the lives lost in the services alongside American soldiers. This resolution not only honors the sacrifices, but highlights the vital role of the Hmong people in American history. So I urge you to support the passage of this resolution to honor the Hmong veterans with the Congressional Gold Medal, ensuring that their story is never forgotten. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Ramirez-Jong from the committee? Seeing none, I'd like to thank you, Ms. Ramirez-Jong, for your service to the community of Anchorage and your family's service to this country. And so thank you for providing your testimony today. I'd like to hold SJR 10 in committee. We will hear public testimony this coming Thursday, April 3rd. I'm setting an amendment deadline on SJR 10 for Wednesday, April 2nd. That's tomorrow by 5 p.m. We will now move on to a presentation on the USS Ted Stevens. Here to present the presentation on USS Ted Stevens is Cherie Curry, president of the USS Ted Stevens Commissioning Committee, and Lily Stevens Becker, daughter of former U.S. Senator Ted Stevens and secretary of the Commissioning Committee. We also have Captain Mary Katie Hayes online, the prospective commanding officer of the USS Ted Stevens. Please put yourself on the record and start your presentation, please.
Good morning, Chair. Cherie Curry, for the record. Thank you for having us, committee. I am the president of the USS Ted Stevens Commissioning Committee, and it is an honor as a lifelong Alaskan to be leading the charge. So we wanted to visit with you today and bring you up to date on where we're at with the ship. I'll turn it over to Lily to really talk about her father's legacy.
Good morning. Good morning, and thank you for having us today. I'm Lily Stevens Becker. So, very excited about the USS Ted Stevens. It's probably the greatest honor of my life to serve as a co-sponsor of the ship, along with my mother, Catherine Stevens, and my sister, Susan Stevens-Kovich. When we christened the ship in 2023, I told the captain and the crew that the spirit of Ted Stevens and the spirit of Alaska would always go with them. My father spent 4 years here in the House, in the State House, 40 years as a U.S. Senator from Alaska, and even more in service to Alaska and the nation. He started his service in 1942 at 19 years old. He tried to enlist in the Marines, but failed the eye exams. So we found a doctor who gave him eye exercises, strengthened his eyes, and became an Army air cadet and a pilot. It was an early example of the determination that would be with him for his entire life. He then enlisted in the Army Air Corps and became a pilot. He flew C-46 and C-47 cargo planes, unarmed, in a combat zone in the China-India-Burma theater. He flew over and landed in occupied territory, loaded with ammunition and supplies, with no navigational aids. He and his crew read clouds, calculated wind and ground speed, and found ways to battle weather and fuel scarcity. This type of determination, of confidence, of perseverance is, of course, part of the spirit of Alaska. I look forward to welcoming the captain and the crew to Alaska for the commissioning, hopefully, to learn firsthand what the spirit of Alaska truly is. So I gave you a little bit about my father's public service, but before his first job in Alaska was in Fairbanks, and he served as the U.S. attorney in Fairbanks, then went to the Department of the Interior and fought for statehood before serving in the Alaska House and of course in the United States Senate. I'm the youngest of six, and he's also known as the nutritional terrorist by his colleagues because he was all about fitness, and so we can talk about that at a different time. There's many different representations, of course, of him, the state capitol portrait, which is here in the building, and we unveiled a U.S. capitol portrait, but perhaps the best representation that welcomes people to Alaska is the statue at the Ted Stevens International Airport, which was unveiled in 2019. And when you're there next, there's many representations that were symbolically placed. And so you can look for the China, India, Burma, World War II patch on his jacket. My children definitely see it as a welcome to Alaska. So here's a few pictures of us as we enter the airport whenever we're here. So the story of Ted Stevens is also the story of Alaskans. And as I said, we hope that when the ship comes to Alaska, the captain and crew will get to learn about that. This looks a little strange. I don't know how to make it look better. But anyway, we'll talk a little bit about the life of the ship. I want to hurry through to get to the captain, the most important person here today. Here we are, the sponsors, and like I said, greatest honor of my life. So we had the keel laying and then the christening, and so I think with that, turn it over to the captain.
Sheree Curry for the record. I'd like to, sometimes she's pretty humble, actually. She's always very humble. I'm not sure what's happening with our slides. There she is. So before we put her on the microphone, I'd like to really touch base on her resume. She received her commission from the U.S. Naval Academy in 1999, Modern Standard Arabic in 2004 with distinction of Master of Arts in National Security Affairs from the Naval Postgraduate School. You can read the rest of that there, but Legion of Merit, Bronze Star Medal, Meritorious Service Medal, Navy and Marine Corps Commendation, and Navy and Marine Corps Achievement Medal. It is quite apropos with Senator Stevens, such a champion of Title IX that the first captain of our ship is a female, and our friend, Captain Mary Katie Hayes, will turn it to you, Captain.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Becker, Ms. Curry, ladies and gentlemen. Can you all hear me?
We can. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. It's an honor to speak to you all today on the record about the future USS Ted Stevens. As mentioned, my name is Captain Mary Katie Hayes. I'm the commanding officer of the future USS Ted Stevens under construction here in Pascagoula, Mississippi. To paint a picture, the ship is in the water and all major equipment has been unloaded onto the ship. The warship's construction is nearing completion and the shipbuilders are busy painting the ship, as well as finishing up the deck coverings, which represent the finishing touches of the construction phase. Last weekend, the shipbuilders from Ingalls Shipbuilding and the technicians from General Electric started the ship's main engines for the first time. The shipyard's focus has shifted from building the ship to testing, which is projected to last until the end of the fall and include several at-sea test periods. Although the future USS Ted Stevens looks like almost every other Arleigh Burke-class destroyer, there are some unique differences that make our ship and future sister ships of the Flight III class of Arleigh Burke destroyers different and the most technologically advanced warships in the world. First and foremost among them is the SPY-6 radar, an improved air and missile defense radar. It's like going from a black and white television with three channels to high definition TV. It is digital, it is automated, and it can detect and defend against air and space threats faster, further, and more accurately than the radars currently in use in the fleet. The radar and its associated upgrades to the Aegis combat system will make Ted Stevens an ideal candidate to replace the older Ticonderoga-class cruisers. Themselves were a great leap forward in naval technology when they were commissioned in the 80s. The crew is currently 150 sailors strong. We expect almost another 200 sailors to join our team before commissioning day. We are busy doing required training and things like shipboard firefighting and equipment maintenance, standing up required programs such as safety and career development, and inspecting our spaces and equipment on board the warship. We are building a culture based around our ship's motto, which is lead with courage. One of the aspects about Senator Stevens I mentioned to the crew often is that he spent his adult life in service of our great nation. He worked to defend freedom and democracy as a young man in the Army Air Corps and continued his legacy of service in the Senate throughout the rest of his life. It is an honor to serve on a ship named for someone who held his fellow citizens in such high regard and believed that he could make the world around him a better place. Sometimes in the age of TikTok and TMZ, the notions of service to country and community can seem old-fashioned. And I think that Senator Stevens' legacy serves as a touch point for the young crew that doing the right thing and serving a noble cause never go out of style. Last spring, I had the opportunity to travel to Alaska to spend some time with the USS Ted Stevens Commissioning Committee and our ship sponsors, visiting several potential commissioning sites. I was accompanied by five crew members, and none of us had ever been to Alaska before. The welcome we received was second to none. We were in awe of the scenery and the wildlife, but the best time was with the people that we met along the way. I have submitted a request to hold the ship's commissioning ceremony in Alaska in the summer of 2026. Commissioning site requests are approved by the Secretary of the Navy. Since the ceremonies tend to be large and attended by VIPs from the civilian community, as well as all levels of government. My request is pending, and I hope it will be approved within the next several months. I'm happy to answer any questions. The support we have received from the people of Alaska has been wonderful. Thank you. Lead with courage.
Thank you, Captain Hayes. Are there questions from the committee for any of our presenters? I have a question. It was intimated a little bit about the nutritional terrorist.
Yes.
So I was wondering if... we could get a little more nuance on what that meant.
Oh, sure. Well,
and just identify yourself for the record again.
Again, Lily Stevens Becker. So my father was, 86 when he left us prematurely. And so he was very focused throughout his life on maintaining his physical fitness. And that included, of course, what he ate. And he was not afraid of sharing that opinion with other people. So he was always up on whatever the latest nutritional guidance was and research as to how to preserve your body and make you strong. So when he passed so the nutritional terrorist was something that his colleagues in the U.S. Senate named him because he was constantly, when not on the floor, telling them what they should eat and how they should exercise. So I hope that I'll find some of the better phases of that for the captain to share with the crew. But when he passed, my brothers and sisters and I were reminiscing about various things, including this. And so one of my least favorite phases was when he decided that you had to have raisin bran for the iron and orange juice for the absorption of the iron for breakfast blended in the blender. So I don't recommend that one. But there are others that were better.
Thank you. That adds a little nuance, as I requested. So thank you for that. And then I did have a comment, kind of a personal comment. So when I was coming to Juneau the first time as a representative-elect, this is last January, so we're talking 2.5 months ago. I stopped at the Ted Stevens statue in the airport. And I sat down. I took a moment, and I really appreciate your father. I always look for role models, and it's nice. He inspired me, and I remember when I would talk to constituents, they had a hard time with my last name, Eichheid, and I said, all you have to remember is Ted, like Uncle Ted Stevens, and that resonated, and so I really appreciate your father, Senator Ted Stevens. I really appreciate the USS Ted Stevens. I'm looking forward to coming to the commissioning. I hope it's approved to be here in Alaska. And I just want to thank all three of you for your service and dedication to our country and to the state of Alaska. And what an honor it is to have you present to us today. So thank you.
Thank you for sharing the story about the statue. Most statues of leaders are up on a pedestal and standing or doing something important. And the vision for that one was that, that wasn't him, right? He wanted to welcome people to Alaska. And so it was as if he were sitting at the airport, which he did many times, and welcoming people. So we love that. Of course, there's space on the bench for everyone to sit next to him. So I know Cherie is going to tell us a little bit about the commissioning, if there's time.
Is there time?
Please.
Thank you. Cherie Curry for the record. I apologize. It seems our slides didn't load up correctly, but bear with us. So I think some of you are former military, so you may understand, you're veterans, you understand what a Navy commissioning is, but it's a traditional ceremonial milestone when the ship is actually put into the fleet of the Navy. I was honored to serve on the USS Anchorage Commissioning Committee as Public Affairs Committee lead, and really got to know a lot about the Navy protocol for that, and honored that the Ted Stevens Foundation has entrusted us to move forward with this ship commissioning. The important thing to understand is it takes an entire community to put on a commissioning. The Navy does not raise the money. The Navy does not, they only take care of the commissioning ceremony on the day of the commissioning. But there is a week-long celebration leading up to that from when the ship comes to port. And Captain Hayes has actually requested a couple other port stops in Alaska. Unlike the Anchorage, they just came to Anchorage and turned around. She has requested, and we will see it here in a moment, Whittier, as well as, I believe, Juneau and possibly Ketchikan or Kodiak. We'll see if we get approved for all those, but it could just be like this big party in Alaska for a couple of weeks. The key stakeholders are the Ted Stevens Foundation, of course. We work really hard to preserve that Senator Stevens' legacy, so everything we do goes through the Ted Stevens Foundation and this little lady right here. The ship's sponsors, of course, Catherine and Sue. And then we answer very closely with, of course, the captain and the program executive office that's in charge of all ships commissionings. And, of course, the citizens of Alaska are going to play a huge part in the celebration. You guys can kind of look through your slides on this one, but these are, acronyms are important sometimes when we get closer to what's happening, but the protocols are real strong, and we actually work with the JAG and the executive officeships, and it's quite the process to work so closely and get everything approved before we make a movement forward. We have a very, I'm honored to lead this very prestigious board. Captain Brian Quinn was the captain of the USS Anchorage, and he is on board. He's done commissionings in Alaska, and that's makes my job much easier. Representative Chuck Kopp is the vice president. Lily, of course. Nick Cohen, treasurer. Greg Chapados is the president and COO of GCI, but he also was a staffer for Senator Stevens in the day. General Joseph Ralston. He and I are traveling to D.C. this week to meet with some Department of Defense contractors and, of course, the delegation to see if we can help move this along with the SECNAV's office. The Honorable Sean O'Keefe was also a staffer of Senator Stevens and the former Secretary of the Navy. He is very helpful. A special note about Sean O'Keefe, he actually was on board the plane when that went down with Senator Stevens on board. They remained friends for years. And then Robin Phillips, Gail Phillips, former Speaker Gail Phillips' daughter, is our special assistant through the Ted Stevens Foundation. It's a great team. It takes a, we don't want to say it takes Navy, it takes an Army, it takes Navy, to put this on. We have about 80 committee members at the moment, and these are all the subcommittees: fundraising, finance, gifts, merchandise, events, invitations, public affairs. We have a ship liaison, Master Chief Eric Zimmerman. He grew up in Alaska. He serves in the Navy Reserves, and he's our ship's liaison. He served actually under Captain Brian Quinn, so very knowledgeable of Anchorage, Alaska, the Navy here, and very, very helpful for us. That's just to name a few of the committees there. So Captain mentioned their slight selection visit. I thought I'd just have a little fun here and show you some photos of that. Here we are at the Dena'ina Center. We had stellar weather except for the day that we went to Seward. Took them to museums because there is a cultural aspect on the ship that will be sponsoring Alaska Native heritage within the ship's walls. And then the Alaska Railroad sponsored us first class on the Aurora car. The team was very cold the first few days, but when we started up in the pass outside of Portage, it didn't matter. They were riding on the back of the train, taking in the beauty and the snow. Did some Kenai Fjords and some fishing. And then we got to Whittier the next day, and it was a stellar day, as you can see. Because it's always so sunny there, you know. Here's a picture of the new Huna Totem Terminal. It's a spectacular facility. If you have not gone to Whittier to tour it, I really encourage you to do so. And the view from inside the terminal, looking back. There are two World War II museums in the United States. One's in New Orleans, Louisiana, and one is in Whittier. And this gentleman has put it together. It's mostly all artifacts from the chain during World War II. Mr. Ted Spencer has done this on his own, a labor of love. This is the cabinet that's dedicated to Senator Stevens. I know Senator Sullivan is working on appropriation to actually build a museum there that will house all of these items in a more upgraded manner. But it's free, or I guess a $5 donation if you want to walk through. And it's right in the grocery store, actually. So it does deserve its own building. The Navy team that joined us were very impressed with the heritage of the Navy in Whittier, and I think that's what sold them on that, besides the Huna Totem beautiful terminal. So the commissioning week committees and events that happen, there's receptions and sponsors lunches and dress rehearsal, but it's mostly about the crew. right? We're here to support the crew and throw them a memorable commissioning. When we held the USS Anchorage, there were block parties for the crew, sailors on the streets of Anchorage, dinners, railroad excursions. A lot of the family members come. So the hotels are full. We work on transportation either via the railroad or the buses. This time, if it is in Whittier, of course, that is logistically going to be a lot more challenging, but it's going to kind of pull everybody together, less cars and everybody kind of commuting together. And museum tours, trips to Girdwood and Anchorage, we do not have the full itinerary up, but as you can see, it's a big project. There will be public ship tours also. So if you have any questions, we're happy to take those. We requested of the governor's office a letter to the Secretary of the Navy talking about how important this is, and hopefully we'll have that so General Ralston can deliver it to the Secretary of Navy for us next week.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Representative Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. Yeah. This is really exciting. So good to see you both again. I'm curious, has an economic analysis been done as far as what the impact is going to be for the state during the commissioning week?
Through the chair, we have not done an economic analysis as of yet. We are working on the budget. Until we know exactly where the stops will be, that it could be challenging. But once we know that, it's definitely something we would like to do.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this sounds like it's going to be quite a week, really impactful, and I'm just really excited to kind of see that kind of activity and economic activity in particular coming to Alaska. So that's really exciting, and I don't know if this is appropriate to ask. Sounds like you're still pulling it all together with the fundraising and everything, but is there an estimate of the funds that are needed to be raised for the commissioning week?
The current estimate is approximately $1 million. Any leftover funds, we're hoping to create an endowment that stays with the ship. There's a lot of challenges, family, medical, things like that, that sometimes sailors need to go home. But we'd like to create an endowment for the ship. I know with the USS Anchorage, there was an appropriation, and we actually were able to return some of it. So very frugal, very careful. We got a tight finance team.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions? Then I'll put myself in the queue. Just two questions. One was, I understood that the projected date for the commissioning was summer of 2026. That was a correct understanding? Okay. And then the other thing is the Christian, I can't pronounce that word, Christensen.
Christening.
Thank you. Fill in the space. I'm just looking at the picture of that. What was that like where you break the just tell me more about that. What's in the bottles that you break on there and what it was like? It looked like it was a group effort.
Happy to tell you, yes. So,
and first, for the record,
again, Lily Stevens Becker. So it was in Pascagoula, Mississippi in August, and you can imagine that it was not Alaska weather at that moment. But we did have a number of Alaskans who came all the way there. It was an incredible experience. I thought that I would puddle up, as my dad would say, but my sister and my mother and I just couldn't wipe the smiles off our face at how incredible, I mean, awesome, right? It awestruck was what it was to be there near the ship. And so, yes, we had incredible speeches from a number of dignitaries who were there, and then walked out to the ship right there. And they did have three champagne bottles for myself, my mother, and my sister. So we were able to say, I think, something along the lines of, on behalf of the President of the United States of America, I christen thee Ted Stevens, and whacked the bottle. And of course, everybody wanted to make sure that that the bottle broke. So we did, I can happily say, had three explosions, 1, 2, 3, and it was just an incredible experience.
That's great. Thank you.
And I will say, you can see the whole video is online on YouTube for the channel of the Huntington Ingalls Shipyard.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for that description. I'd like to see that in person sometime. It sounds like it was a great experience. So thank you. Thank you to Ms. Stevens-Becker, Ms. Curry, and Captain Hayes for your presentation and for everything that you're doing for our nation and the state of Alaska. That concludes our agenda for today. Just as a reminder of what I said before, I'm setting an amendment deadline on Senate Joint Resolution 10 for 5 p.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, April 2nd, and then we'll hear public testimony on that item this Thursday, April 3rd. This meeting of the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs is adjourned at 10:58 a.m.